I wanna grow up, maybe if I did.
Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the Toy Department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
That's good stuff, man. I like that.
Thank you. I feel good about it.
It's like a big grand entrance.
Right? Right?
Yeah. All right. If you're listening to this, welcome to the Toy Department. This is our very first episode. He's Matt Kolsky. I'm Derek Madden. And Matt, why do we call this the Toy Department?
Well, the idea I had, because we talk a lot, we both work in radio and in sports radio anyway. We talk a lot about how we have no wherewithal or expertise or anything to say about the important things, and we kind of stick to the toy department of life, and that was more or less the thought I had in doing this podcast. Is I have nothing useful to say about the important things in the world, whether it's news, politics. That stuff mostly upsets and depresses me, but I have lots to say about, you know, movies and sports and music, so it seemed like that was a good title.
Yeah, and you look, there are very serious things in the world. I know about some of those things. I have opinions about some of those things, but no one cares about my opinions about any of those things, right?
Probably not. I don't, certainly.
But people tend to seem to want to know what records I think are good. And
there you go.
You know, stuff like that.
That's the sort of stuff I can get down with.
All right, so what kind of toys are we talking about today?
Well, we had a lot of things on the docket of various kinds, but the first thing that I think struck a nerve with both of us, although I don't know which nerve it struck with you. So I'm interested to see if we're on the same side of this. But there's been this sort of low-key internet argument between reasonable people and wildly unreasonable people about whether or not a hot dog is a sandwich.
Oh, yeah. I have feelings on this. In fact, I actually over Thanksgiving had this discussion with my entire family.
Really?
So I'm very curious as to what side of the is a hot dog a sandwich debate do you land on?
Okay, well, I'll tell you right now, of course it's not a sandwich. It would be absolutely patently ridiculous to call a hot dog a sandwich. Now, if you want to have a conversation about whether a burger is a sandwich, I'm at least going to listen to you. But if you, I swear to God, if you tell me a hot dog's a sandwich right now, the podcast might end before it even really gets started.
Okay, so here's the thing, right? Whenever you get this question, I think any sane person's reasonable reaction is exactly what you said.
Yeah.
Of course a hot dog is not a sandwich.
Right.
However.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
When you start getting into why it's not a sandwich, essentially the only argument seems to come down to because it isn't. It's just not. It's a hot dog.
Isn't it?
Right?
It's the pornography argument. It's the Supreme Court pornography argument. I can't define pornography, but I know what when I see it. I can't necessarily give you hard and fast every time rules about what a damn sandwich is, but I can tell you for goddamn sure that a hot dog is not one. It's pretty straightforward.
All right. But I think, look, there are some things about sandwiches we can all agree upon,
uh-huh.
Right?
That yes.
A sandwich is generally two pieces of bread.
Correct. Or thereabouts, yeah.
With some sort of filling in between, typically a meat, but certainly not necessarily limited to meat.
Of course
obviously
not.
Peanut butter jelly is a popular sandwich.
Obviously.
But sort of vegetables and whatever.
Yeah, people can have veggie sandwiches. That's a thing. You can have you can be a vegetarian and still eat sandwiches.
So I would submit to you, is a hot dog not a piece of meat wedged between two pieces of bread with, various seasonings and condiments and whatever thrown on top of it.
Well, I would start
a la a sandwich.
I would start by saying, and now, first of all, meat between breads or contents between breads does not fully constitute a sandwich. It is characteristic of a sandwich.
Okay.
Secondly, I would say that although this fact does not preclude sandwichness, a hot dog also is generally not between two pieces of bread. It's specifically on a bun. And I would add, unlike a sandwich bun, which is definitely a thing, a hot dog bun is specifically shaped to hold a hot dog. And really, you don't cut it in half. You just kind of put a slit in it and drop the hot dog into that slit, fitting comfortably into its bun, which is really a specific wrapper catered for the hot dog.
Okay, now that's a powerful argument, but let me submit to you that the hot dog bun with its, you know, kind of one piece together sort of with the giant slit in it,
mm-hmm.
how is that any different from, say, a cheesesteak roll? Is that not also one piece of bread with a large slit cut in it?
It certainly is. And that is, I'm not going to lie, that's where we get into some gray area. There's some shady territory.
Because a cheesesteak is undisputedly a sandwich, no?
Yes, correct. Okay. But it's also a specific sandwich. In other words, if I am at home, all right, and I say I'm gonna make a sandwich, I would actually venture, first of all, if I then produced a hot dog, everybody around would call me a jerk and be very confused. But I would even say, if I said, does anyone want sandwiches, and a group of people said, yes, we'd love sandwiches, I would say they might even be a little, not angry, but surprised if I returned with cheesesteaks, because it's a very particular thing that's been defined specifically as a sandwich, you know, in the context of whence it came from Philadelphia. That's their sandwich. In the same vein, the Chicago sandwich, which is really the Italian beef, is also kind of in a bun situation, but it's a more bready bun, and it's more, again, defined specifically as a sandwich in its invention.
Okay, let's say hypothetically, mm-hmm. you're hosting these people at your house or whatever, and you're going to make them all sandwiches. And for whatever reason, you know, gremlins came in overnight and stole your normal bread.
Yeah.
And all you had was hot dog buns. And you came back with the sandwich that was like, I don't know, your typical sub sandwich or whatever. But you served it on a hot dog bun. And you said, hey, guys, sorry, I know we're having sandwiches. We're out. Will you eat it on this hot dog bun? Would that not be a sandwich?
I think that would end up being a sandwich, but as you sort of pointed out yourself there, you would definitely have to make the point that, I'm sorry, I don't have the thing you actually asked for, which is a normal sandwich. I have what is essentially this bootleg half-ass sandwich made on this non-sandwich bread.
I suppose, but it's still bread. You know what I mean? And I just...
Well, it's bread. It's a bread-like substance. Wouldn't you say that the character of a hot dog bun, the sort of the way it feels, the texture, the consistency is different from almost any bread or even roll or bun you would use in a different scenario?
Like, I mean,
hot dog buns, especially, like, if you go to the ball game, right, and you get the crappy boiled hot dog in the smushed up bun, like, that hot dog bun is a quintessential thing that exists that you could buy at the store that is specifically hot doggy, and even if it was shaped differently, it would still be sort of bun material.
But doesn't what are they called? The Omarosa rolls? What is it? The really good cheesesteak rolls rolls?
I think those are more like...
Don't they have their own
texture?
Those
seem like more like soft French bread to me than a hot dog bun, which
right.
is...
Right, but so the whole distinction then for it not being a sandwich is the texture of the bread upon which the two meats are shoved between?
No, I think it's more of it's all of these things in concert, you know? It's the fact that, it's not... Now, I should say, you could definitely make a hot dog sandwich, because if I take a big sandwich roll, I lay a hot dog or two on there and right. melt some cheese, maybe throw some onions on, and then put the top piece of bread on top of it, I've made a hot dog sandwich.
What if I told you, and this is true, so it's not even so I'm just going to tell you. I don't even know why I did the what if I told you. Did you know, how about this, that when the hot dog arrived in America, you know, it was imported from Europe in the late 1800s, mm-hmm. It was often referred to as a Coney Island sandwich or a Frankfurter sandwich.
Interesting. This is information I was not aware of.
That is true. Now, I'll give you the back half of that.
Okay.
I learned that in a statement from the National Hot Dog Council.
You've really done your research.
I did some research. And their position is also that a hot dog is not a sandwich.
It is.
So, yes.
Okay. So I'm in good company there in that respect.
And there's a quote here I'm going to give you, and then you're going to puke. Limiting the hot dog significance by saying it's just a sandwich.
Oh, you're right. I'm upset.
is like calling the Dalai Lama just a guy.
Oh, no.
Perhaps at one time its importance could be limited by forcing it into a larger sandwich category, no disrespect to Rubens and others, but that time has passed, said NHDSC president and queen of weed, Janet Riley. So there you go. We therefore choose to take a cue from great performers and declare our namesake be a hot dog formerly known as a sandwich. That's an official press release.
The sandwich is clearly superior to the hot dog. That's kind of the whole basis of my argument.
But isn't, I mean, here's the thing, right? It's like, isn't the hot dog just a subset of sandwich?
Oh, God. Isn't the, I can't believe I'm even listening to this right now. I don't think it is. I really don't think it is. And again, like there's just, okay, how's this? If I say, do you want a sandwich? And then I ask, what do you want on that sandwich? Okay. Your options are myriad. Just last night, I had a Thanksgiving leftover sandwich that had stuffing and mashed potatoes and turkey and even a little bit of cranberry sauce on it.
I'm the king of the Thanksgiving leftover sandwich.
Oh, I love the Thanksgiving leftover sandwich.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's the bomb. Then on the other side, you could have a turkey sandwich with melted cheese and onions and some, you know, roasted red peppers and mustard and whatnot. Or you might want a fancy sandwich with like brie and apples and shit on it. But, oh, by the way, we never specifically addressed whether we were going to swear.
Well, I think we just did.
Okay. Cool. I just wanted to make sure you didn't want that back because we could always go bleep the stuff out and I could stop swearing.
We may need to bleep this in case I actually want to put this up on one of our affiliated websites here at some point.
Okay. All right. Cool. Yeah. We'll hammer that out. But back to what I was saying, the damn sandwich has all these incredible options. You can customize it and variegate it in all these different ways, different meats if you want meat, different vegetables, cheeses, condiments, sauces, et cetera, et cetera. A hot dog is inherently limited in not only being stuck with the tube meat, but also condiment-wise, there's certain things you simply can't put on a hot dog.
Well, look, there are certain condiments that don't go with certain types of ingredients in certainly any
kind. Yeah, but hot dog's more sandwich. Specific. Like, you really, if you're having a hot dog, you're pretty much stuck with, like, onions, relish, mustard, ketchup, you know, I suppose we could include like chili dog and stuff like that in it as well. But you're
some people get more creative. You can certainly put cheese on a sandwich. By the way, I'm going to give you the Wikipedia definition of a sandwich.
Okay.
A sandwich is a food item consisting of one or more types of food, such as vegetables, sliced cheese, or meat, placed on or between slices of bread, or more generally, any dish wherein two or more pieces of bread serve as a container or wrapper for some other food.
Okay, but check this out. Would you call pigs in a blanket a sandwich?
Would I call pigs in a blanket a sandwich?
I mean, it's meat surrounded.
I would.
It's meat surrounded by like a carbohydrate crust that
encases
it. But it's
not bread. That's a crust. It's a crust. It's not a bread. And there are not two or more pieces of bread.
Okay. Hold on.
Right?
Well, but there's but then that calls the cheesecake and hot dog back into question. Like, there's really not two.
I'm willing to listen to the idea that a sandwich has to be on bread, and if you have it on a bun, it's a different kind of dish. But then that makes a hamburger not a sandwich. And I can even live with that if you
say,
okay, the hamburger is its own thing. However, consider the Chick-fil-A, right? The Chick-fil-A is on a bun.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see how you could not call that a chicken sandwich.
It's got to be a chicken sandwich. That's true.
So then I just come back to, ultimately with me, the idea that a hot dog is not a sandwich is a purely emotional argument.
Yeah, it's a visceral reaction.
Yes, I agree. And I have the same visceral reaction. But when you start to think about it and apply logic and reason, it's a damn sandwich. It's maybe a limited inferior type of sandwich.
I think that's clear. If it's a sandwich, it's clearly limited and inferior. Not that I have any problem with a hot dog fundamentally. I'll eat a hot dog.
Where do you stand? So you're kind of like you're down for hot dogs. Are you excited about hot dogs?
If I am at like a backyard barbecue, where we can char it up and get some good mustard and maybe some like grilled peppers and onions, I can really get down with a hot dog.
Yeah, but it's a situational type of food for me. I need to be in the right time and place to want a hot dog.
I can give you this information. 3 years ago, when I went to Golden State Warrior basketball games, I would eat the day-old hot dogs that they serve us in the press room.
Ooh.
I have not eaten one of those in over a year. So as I have aged into now being 34 years old, I have decided, apparently, that a certain level of hot dog is no longer really something I'm interested in, even if it's free.
I feel like that's really a sign of growing up, and I've reached that same place as well. Now, you're in SF. There are a couple of really nice hot dog spots where you can get kind of high-end hot dogs.
Exactly.
Do you frequent those very often?
I wouldn't say I frequent them, but I certainly have been to them and would go again if the situation presented itself. And, of course, there's lots of good sausage places where you get a little more fanciness to what you're getting down with. You know, maybe a little chorizo sausage or some, like, turkey apple sausages. They got some tasty spicy lamb sausages, all sorts of weird stuff.
Yeah. Just for me, like I said, going back to the inferior thing, I think they're just typically they're to me more interesting sandwich options.
Exactly.
But I maintain, Brad, a hot dog is still a sandwich. It's a very specific type of sandwich, but still a sandwich.
I am chagrined that we've reached this point where I refuse to say that a hot dog is a sandwich. I will not simply admit that. however, I'm forced to at least admit that there is a solid argument to be made there from a technical perspective.
I feel like I've moved you a little bit in this debate.
Yeah, mostly you've just depressed me, but yeah, I suppose you've moved me a little bit as well. Yeah. Oh boy.
All right, I can live with that.
All right.
you want to move me on Creed? I'm not moved. I just haven't gotten a chance to go to the movies yet.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Everyone should see this movie. I love Rocky, the first Rocky, and I was always a big Rocky IV fan as well. You know, 2 and 3 are fine, 5 and 6 are pretty bad. But it's not like I had been waiting for another installment in the Rocky world or you know, it's not like I was counting down the days and went on opening night to see Creed. So it's noteworthy, I think, that I was surprised at how affected I was by A, being taken back into the sort of the world of Rocky, because it's really not a Rocky sequel. Rocky's a supporting character. But I have to say, beyond just how much that affected me, and there were 100% tears welling up in my eyes at certain points when certain themes began to play in certain situations, mm-hmm. I also think, just on a pure film level, forget the Rocky stuff, forget all of that. I think Ryan Coogler is one of the best young directors we have in Hollywood. I think Michael B. Jordan is as good a young actor as there is in Hollywood. And I truly think this was the best acting performance of Sylvester Stallone's somewhat impressive career.
Well, now that's what I'm hearing. And, you know, it's weird for me because I enjoy Rocky and I wouldn't bag on the first four Rocky movies.
Yeah.
But like at the same time, I feel like a lot of Sylvester Stallone's life and career post that invalidated some of that.
Well,
you know what I mean?
I look to two things. Rocky I, I think he's very good. He loses the heart of that character as the movies go along. He becomes just sort of a mush mouth doofus. But in Rocky I, he's an interesting character that I think did require some real acting. And then Copland is the other one I think of.
And
a really strong performance by Stallone, but I think this is better. I mean, he just does a great job of being an old Rocky, and I don't get the feeling that would have been easy for a guy like Sylvester Stallone, because to get him, I mean, basically, Ryan Coogler and Michael B. Jordan pitched him this movie. This was a fan fiction film, essentially.
And really?
They started this project before they made Fruitvale Station, and so they spent much of that time just convincing Stallone to let them do it and to be in it. And, you know, whatever convincing it took, he clearly bought in to being not a guy going to recapture his glory, but being an aged Rocky and the perspective that guy would have and the way he would handle himself. And it was subtle. I just thought it was an incredible performance. And I'm kind of with you. I don't go to a movie with Sly thinking I can't wait to see what he does from an acting perspective. So that's, I think, part of what was so impressive.
Do you see this as a Travolta in Pulp Fiction moment where now it's going to usher in this Sly Stallone renaissance where we're going to be seeing him all the time?
That's such I'm a not funny sure I'm prepared question. For that. I'm not. No, I don't know that that's possible. I mean, because as we kind of just said about what can he do? I mean, Travolta had been gone from the public eye, right? But we kind of knew he could do a few different things. I'm not sure. I guess it could. It certainly, I feel after the film, I feel like Sylvester Stallone has an acting gear I wasn't aware of. But it's hard for me to think of any role just from a like general description perspective that would work for him going forward. I'm not sure what that renaissance would involve.
Whereas, just worried that he's gonna now I gotta find my next stop or my mom will shoot or you know.
Oh boy. Oh boy. Yeah, I'm not sure anyone is looking for that to be.
You know, there's a lot of danger in the world. The world's ready for another Rambo. We're gonna make a Rambo 17.
Yeah, but see, you know what? And this is not totally my original thought, but I've heard it mentioned, and I totally agree with it. That what was great about this role is that there was no attempt to be the Rambo or even really the Rocky. You know, it was not a recapture of the glory. I'm not sure he's in that place where he wants to be Rambo again. He was a very vulnerable character in this movie, and that worked.
You know who's got it figured out, I think, is Michael Keaton.
Oh, yeah, just wait 20 years and then do a big star turn?
Yeah, well, who is it? You know, like, he's supposed to be truly, truly excellent in Spotlight, which everyone says is going to walk away with the Oscar.
Yeah, I do want to see that. I've heard good things.
And so he's got this thing now, I think, where it's like, hey, I'm just going to hang out and I'll just show up in the best movie of the year every year.
Yeah, that's
smart.
And
you won't
smart.
See me otherwise. And that's kind of like a good gig, right?
Yeah, no, it's great work if you can get it, absolutely. Yeah. By the way, I did see, I have gotten a little movie crazy over the last couple of weeks because it had been a while. There was like kind of a dead zone for movies. And now with Oscar season heating up, I have seen several of the films, including last night I saw The Night Before, which was very funny. Very, very funny.
Probably not going to win any Oscars, I'm guessing.
Probably not. Although, if there was an Oscar for behaving as though you had taken mushrooms, Seth Rogen would win that Oscar.
Really?
He is... Let's just say Seth Rogen clearly has a good grasp of what of what a mushroom trip might be like.
Well, all you need to do is watch the League, I think, to understand that.
God, that show.
The Man Who Eats Mushrooms. That show... I still watch it every week, but man, has it gone off the rails. You know what
Completely.
I mean?
Completely. Like, well, I think they realized it's one of these things where, and this happens to a lot of the sort of newer comedies, because a lot of them are based around people doing awful stuff to each other, right? It's just people being brutally crappy to one another. So I kind of think the League realized what a lot of them realized, which is at a certain point, you can't just keep doing crappy things. So you either have to like... get a conscience and a heart, or you have to go completely off the rails. And they certainly chose the latter.
They're like, we're just going any sort of bodily function humor we can work into this thing where we are working it in there.
They literally had a season finale, 2 years ago that was all about people just crapping their pants all at once. That was like the end of the season.
Oh man. Why did I come back for that? Another show on FX or FXX, I should say.
Yeah, FXX.
If you can find that. When I told my mom about the show, and it's like, it's on FXX, and she's like, is that their porno channel? And I'm like, no, and mom, it's the terribly named channel.
Porno channel.
Dead serious. She was dead serious about
that. Is that a thing that channels have? They have a porno version?
I guess HBO does, might have one. Yeah, yeah.
Cinemax probably has one.
Yeah. You're the Worst is the show that I think both you and I have been enjoying and watching. And are you 100% on board with season two? You know, there's a critical consensus about this show that seems to be pretty unanimous.
You're asking for a big commitment with the 100% on board. I am a high percent. I'm above 75% on board.
Okay.
There have been some. So for people who aren't watching it, I think we can say
Which
without
is
spoiling
everyone.
Too much. It's, that is everyone.
Anyone who's listening right now who's not you or me.
That's true.
I think are probably the category of people who are not watching.
So for all of you who have not been watching You're the Worst, it really began as a show about two awful people falling in love. And the first season was hilariously evil and dark, but also light in a way, because it's about these awful people with sort of low-stakes circumstances in most of the situations. And in the second season, it has gotten into the mucky waters of clinical depression. And I think mostly it treats it in an interesting and fresh way that is not offensive, but there have been some cringy moments for me. I will say that. And also, there's just the fact of a show that was literally making me giggle out loud last year now has some really intense, serious stuff happening in it, in addition to being funny. I mean, they still have rappers named Shitstain in a rap battle that's entertaining.
Yes.
But yeah, it's gotten a little heavy.
I think you've hit on some of the problem, at least for me. And I'm still on board. I'm still watching. I'd still recommend you check it out if you haven't. But I have nothing against ramping up the emotional stakes in a show. I think typically that's a great idea. I have nothing against necessarily dealing with serious issues. And I think, by the way, the actress
Aya Cash, she's amazing.
Who plays Gretchen, kind of one of the main bad people on the show. Yeah. Her performance this season has been awesome. I got no problem with that. I think all of that is good. However, and you sort of touched on it there, none of that matters if you can't make me laugh on a consistent basis. I appreciate that you're taking a fresh and realistic approach to depression, but I don't, you know, if I can't crack a smile, then all of a sudden I've signed up for a different show and a less interesting show. You know, I mean, TV is a medium where you're asking people to come back every week, even if you're not setting an appointment, you're grabbing that season pass and sort of making some time, 25 minutes a show if you're on DVR. You have to want to spend time in the world and spend time with those people, and there's been a little less of that. And when I look back at this season, and I've seen every episode, and I think of, well, you know, there was the scenes in the haunted house were pretty funny.
Oh yeah.
And you know, the no phone who dis was pretty funny.
I agree. I like that a lot. I by the way,
that's kind of all I got. I'm out. Yeah. I'm out after that. That's about right. I can't tell you anything else funny.
There was some good masturbation comedy, but generally you're right. And I just do want to say, because you mentioned Aya Cash, Keith or Donahue, who plays her friend, and you mentioned the no phone who dis, which again, we're referencing things I'm sure nobody knows, but
exactly,
she has just some incredible moments on the show, and I find her delightful. But the stuff you were saying plays right into kind of a new life approach of mine that fits both this podcast and my fragile psyche, which is I'm pretty out on bad time media. Unless something is exceedingly good, I don't want to go to the movies, sit in front of the television, watch a sporting event, anything. I don't want to do any of those things and have a bad time. Even if it's the quality, even if it's, you know, artistically sound, for the most part, I want to have a good time when I do these things, because I can have a bad time in my normal life pretty much whenever I want.
Yeah.
I can get sad about things like at almost any time.
You're like, it's right over there.
Yeah. So I'm kind of with you on that, but in a way, I feel like this show sucked me in because I'm also a completist. So I can't. I have a lot of trouble quitting. I mean, something has to really go into the, like, I stayed with Weeds till like season 6. You know what
oh,
I mean?
Yeah, me
like,
too.
I have a lot of trouble being like, well, I don't really need to know what happens to those people in their non-existent, magical, invented future. So I'm pretty locked in, and I gotta say, although it's a little tough at times, and although there haven't necessarily, we can't maybe look back and point to those 15 hilarious moments that we could in the first season, I do feel like most of the episodes I'm smiling or chuckling for a lot of it.
Yeah.
And then I'm trying to also process the stuff that they're dealing with. And in a way, although I'm kind of with you on not being totally satisfied by that approach, I'm also kind of, I got to give them a little credit. Stephen Falk, I believe, is the showrunner and creator. I got to give him a little credit for sucking me in and then kind of foisting this stuff on me and making me think about it.
Yeah, well, look, I'm not saying the show's not well made. It is. You know, maybe it's a thing. Maybe it's, you know, why do you come to this thing? Because, I agree with you what you said. And, you sort of made me think about it when you were talking about I don't want to have bad times anymore. Because I don't necessarily feel that way.
Yeah.
I am riveted by The Leftovers.
Oh, yeah. I can't watch that.
Which is just...
It's bad time television.
It is bad time core. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, they are inventing weeks, in many ways, every week to make sure that you have a worse time than you did before. And that's kind of like, I think the appeal of it is like, wow, it really went for it on the sadness scale this time. It's really well done and really well put together, and I can't get enough of it. I also enjoy The Affair on Sunday nights, which is not
that's
exactly
another
good
one.
Time television either.
Everyone keeps telling me to watch it. It's so good, but it's like, I don't really want to watch people get sad about cheating on each other. It just, that feels like... you know what I want to do on a Sunday night? I want to blast through some Walking Dead, slaughter some zombies, and then you know what? I did get a little bit sucked in for the
That's
first three
bad
episodes.
Bad time television too, in its own way, though.
In its own
way. Actually, I shouldn't even say in its own way.
But
like,
it's
I mean,
action.
It's like
it's
in
action,
between
though.
The burst of zombies, it's nothing but people going staring into a bleak and hopeless hellscape that's never ever going to change.
I know, but it's so fantastical and entertaining. That's a different thing to me. I am watching The Walking Dead, despite its bleakness, with a big smile on my face because I'm watching crazy zombie slaughter.
I mean, look, The Walking Dead. Now we segued from a show that we
right
love
into
that
it.
no one watches to a show that everyone watches.
Yeah, you don't love The Walking Dead.
I don't love The Walking Dead.
Okay.
I watch The Walking Dead. I'm still in on The Walking Dead,
okay.
And I've come to a place of acceptance with The Walking Dead.
I feel like this season's been good though.
It's such a flawed show. You know what I mean? Like there's so many just character development issues, and the episodes are wildly uneven, and some are great and some are ho-hum.
That's true. And I think this season's been so pretty high level. But again, for me, it's an action show.
Yeah. And so, that's kind of the way I watch. It's like, all right, I want to, I'm going to watch a couple zombie murders.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to get some, groaning about leadership and responsibility.
Okay, yeah. That part does drag on a little bit. But, as long as someone dies in most episodes, I feel pretty good about
it. Would you put it anywhere near the same league as Game of Thrones?
No.
Right. You know what I mean? Like, they're wasted to do that show.
Yeah, I'm not sure I don't know that they want to be anywhere near Game of Thrones, though.
I feel like it owes a huge debt to Lost, and Lost is a much greater show in its construction and execution than Walking Dead.
Ooh, Lost had some rough times. I love Lost.
It did have some rough times.
But
Lost had some rough times.
And the ending might be one of those rough times, by the way.
But I think that the Lost thing was very different, right? Where Lost's rough times were kind of the result of showbiz machinations where they were like,
okay,
all right,
let's stretch this out. Right.
Eight more. We're going to get to eight seasons. So we're going to need you to vamp a little bit.
Six seasons of a movie.
Exactly. So there were some middle periods where things were, the pacing of Lost was pretty weird. However, the character development to me in that show was so strong. And I think I have less of a problem with Lost even in retrospect than some people did, because for me, that shit was never a show about answers. It was
right.
A show about people, and the people were so well drawn.
Yeah, I agree with that. But in that, if we're going to frame it that way, I would frame Walking Dead as a show about zombies. You know what I mean? And killing them. They've had some delusions of grandeur at times, and that has probably led them astray. And there have been some odd decisions with cliffhangers and stuff like that that I'm not totally on board with, especially the one that happened this year. But I'm mostly there for the zombie action, and it still serves that up pretty strong.
I haven't seen the mid-season finale. I'm one episode behind. So,
okay.
Keep that in mind.
Okay.
That said, I mean, the zombie killing is the one thing in the show that's the same every week, right?
Kind of the same, but
you never get tired of that?
No. That's what I come for. You know what I mean? Like, it's like when the psychopaths in the Roman Empire showed up at the Colosseum, you think they ever got tired of gladiators stabbing each other?
Are you comparing yourself to a psychopath in the Roman Empire?
Well, I think it's fair for me to admit that clearly there's something wrong with me if I keep returning just to watch zombies get slaughtered every week.
And shout shame. Shame.
Before we maybe jump off of television, quick question for you. Do you watch any of the comic book television? Watching Flash or Arrow or any of that stuff?
I have serious superhero fatigue.
Okay.
Serious superhero fatigue. It takes a lot to get me to a superhero movie at this point.
What about Star Wars? You going to go to Star Wars?
Yeah. I'm in on Star Wars, okay. But I'm cautious about Star Wars because I remember.
You remember the excitement for Phantom Menace?
Yeah.
Me too.
I remember I stood in line for Phantom Menace for 3 hours on opening night. And then just remember just being so angry about how much of my life was wasted on that crap. I lost a whole evening to Phantom Menace and, you know, I'd gotten all that anticipation up and it was Jar Jar. I don't even think I watched the other two.
It absolutely was.
Maybe I saw the one after that. I definitely did not see number whatever.
What it's worth, the first one is by far the worst. I mean, none of episodes 1 through 3 are quality movies or even really very satisfying. But 2 and 3, one of them was better than the other. Can't remember which tells you something. But they were at least watchable. 1 remains horrifying and unwatchable. And I think it is sort of one of the greatest tragedies in movie history because, as you said, I mean, it was people in line, in costume, and it could not have fallen flatter. It could not have failed more to uphold the, like, sensibilities and style of the original trilogy. So, yeah, it was as disastrous as you could be. So I get it. I get holding back a little bit, but also, I don't really remember what it was like watching the Phantom Menace previews. Obviously, it kept everybody excited, but
yeah, people were stoked.
Yeah, but there is something. Don't you think there's something about these previews that feels less cheesy and obnoxious than the
cautiously optimistic? Yeah. It seems like the franchise is in good hands. And,
We trust J.J. Abrams, right? That's a thing.
There's going to be more characters that, you know, you're kind of familiar with.
Yeah, a person of color and a woman in the main characters of a major motion picture franchise? Who knew that could work?
Yeah, look at you, Effie Brown, over here. It's crazy.
Okay. Go ahead.
All right, sorry. So, let's jump off of TV and Star Wars.
Yes.
For a minute. And I want to jump into the music world.
Yeah.
Here at 93X, we're a rock station, and I can't think of anything that engenders just sort of more talk from people and fans than the prospect of a Guns N' Roses reunion. I don't know where you are kind of on the story or how much you know.
I know little, and in all honesty, cards on the table, my feelings, I have no particularly strong feelings about Guns N' Roses in any way.
Okay. And that's fine. And I don't think you'll need them for this.
All right.
But I'll just run it down. A few months back, Slash and Axl, who, famously have hated each other and just said awful things about each other for 10, 15 years.
That I do know.
Yeah. Supposedly buried the hatchet. And so, of course, that immediately got the talk starting, and there were more and more rumors going around, and it was, it was fine. It was speculation, and it only seemed credible just in terms of the amount and volume of it. But then things have started happening, including now on the Guns N' Roses website, you can buy merchandise with the original logos and lineups.
Which so that was not the case like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, not only would it just not have been the case and not the kind of thing that the Guns N' Roses would even want to, the current version of Guns N' Roses would even want to acknowledge. On top of that, those copyrights were, because they're sort of co-owned by Slash and Axl and Duff and I think someone else. So there was some legal controversy.
So legally,
there were lots of lawsuits. So now, all of that kind of got settled and now all this merchandise is appearing and everyone in the business thinks that this is happening. Probably at Coachella, which should be announced sometime here in the next couple of weeks. So I think there's sort of this rumble of a fever pitch of Guns N' Roses.
Let me ask you this. The original lineup is Axl / Duff. And who's the drummer?
Steven Adler is the drummer.
Okay, and there's another guitarist too?
Yes, Izzy Stradlin.
Izzy Stradlin.
He's the guitarist. And this is good. I'm glad you brought this up. You know, generally, the story that's going around is that the version that you're going to get is Slash, Axl, Duff, and whoever.
Okay, basically. So when people talk about the original lineup, they're really just talking about those three: Duff McKagan, Axl Rose, and Slash.
Yeah. Now I would maintain, and this is, we'll get into GNR fan nerdness here, that is not the original lineup. You can't have the original lineup of Guns N' Roses without Izzy.
Well, it's like Sabbath going on tour without Bill Ward and calling it the original lineup, right?
Kind of. But here's even, to me, the greater distinction of that is that Izzy was the guy that wrote most of Appetite for Destruction.
Really?
And a good chunk of Use Your Illusion as well. And then he left the band during that process.
Well, it sure sounds
the
like
band
he was
never
important.
The same.
Yeah.
Yeah, after Izzy left. And it's not an accident that the next record after Use Your Illusion was a covers record. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Axl has never had the same sort of songwriting success apart from Izzy. That's a key cog in the band. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
He's an OG dude. And
here's the question I would ask you based on everything you've just said. He was a key dude in creating that music. But as a rhythm guitarist, probably not as key in playing it, right? And isn't the original lineup getting back together more about playing the hits than about creating anything new?
Well, and I think that gets right to the crux of it. It's like, what are we demanding from these original lineups? I would argue that what you're looking for, it is a nostalgia trip. And so what you want is this like realistic simulation of what it might, you know, I never got to see Guns N' Roses.
Yeah, right.
There are, you know, of course, the longer we go, the more and more fans there are out there who never got to see this band, certainly totally. In their prime. And I think all of us are looking for an approximation of that experience, right? That's what we want out of a Guns N' Roses reunion.
Right.
You know, you're not going to get Axl with the same kind of vocal fastball.
Yeah, because that's what I was going to say. I know people prefer Slash to Buckethead and all that stuff, but ultimately, isn't the problem with the new Guns N' Roses more Axl Rose than anything?
Maybe, but I guess that's kind of it. It's like, why do you prefer Slash to Buckethead?
And I think it's just because Slash was on the old albums, right? I mean, right. That's the only real distinction.
He's the guy. So yeah. When you're looking up there, you're like, that's the guy.
He's
that
got the hat
thing.
And the hair
and I'm
with
watching
the stuff.
The guy.
Yeah.
I remember I went to see, you remember the band Them Crooked Vultures? It was kind of one of those
course.
Dave Grohl
Of course. I love Them
projects.
Crooked Vultures. Josh Homme, Dave Grohl.
And John Paul Jones from Led Zeppelin.
Exactly.
I remember going to see those guys a couple years ago, and I spent half the time just sitting there going, that dude was in Led Zeppelin.
Yeah, absolutely.
He was one of the guys. Went through the whole thing. He knows the real story with the shark and the whatever.
I have
seen,
I have seen, what's his face, Robert Plant with folk bands for exactly that reason.
Yeah. Me, and I had the same reaction when you see Plant. And it's like, if Axl's not up there, you can't go, that's that guy. And isn't that really, that's all we really want is to go, because we know it's not going to be as good.
You just want Axl, Slash, and Duff on stage together. And like, you want the guitars like facing each other and Axl like screaming over them and great.
There they are. Those are the guys.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think ultimately that's what we want, right?
Yeah. And as a guy who just went to one of the Grateful Dead reunion shows.
Are you talking about the Grateful Dead with John Mayer reunion?
No, I went to one of the ones with Trey out here in the Bay Area.
Of course.
Although this is a conversation you have no interest in, but if somebody did, I would tell them that I think John Mayer is a better Jerry Garcia than Trey is.
You know what? I might actually be interested in that conversation someday.
Yeah.
We'll have a future John Mayer discussion. I feel like that needs to be in the cards.
Yeah. I mean, you can trash talk his demeanor and behavior all you want, but the man can slay an electric guitar.
That's not all he can slay.
He can play the blues. That's accurate. It is not all he can slay. Well played by you.
Thank you.
Yeah, so that's the thing with reunion shows, though, right? Is we I can tell you for a fact, without ever seeing the Grateful Dead, and frankly, not even being like a diehard Grateful Dead fan, I find them just okay. They are nothing compared to what they were. Even if John Mayer was actually Jerry Garcia, they would be nothing because Phil Lesh can't do what he used to be able to do. I'm not sure Bob Weir was ever that good. And anyway, the point is they're not great at what they do anymore. They're all very good musicians. They all have tons of experience and knowledge and all that stuff, but they're no longer the elite musicians that they were. And I think certainly that applies to Axl. Slash and Duff probably still have it, but fundamentally, so much of what you got from Guns N' Roses was the wild range on Axl's voice and the incredible rock scream, and I just don't know if that's possible anymore.
Well, that and, you know, they were a band and that delivered something that I think is really sorely missing from music right now, which is the feeling that, oh my God, anything could happen tonight.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
Like, these guys are drunk and they're animals and there could be a riot. They could be having sex with somebody on stage, underneath the stage, behind the stage. There might be fights. You know, who knows? Who knows what's going to happen at the Guns N' Roses concert tonight?
I think that probably still exists to a degree. I think some of that, I think a lot of that's in hip hop or the hip hop world now. Like if you go see Tyler, the Creator, I think anything could happen.
You know who I saw was this, and this is kind of a guy who sort of touches on all the different worlds. This guy, Yellow Wolf.
Oh, yeah, I know him.
Who's a rapper and an Eminem contemporary.
Yeah.
It's a guy we played on 93X. He kind of combines. He's hip-hop, you know what I mean?
Yes.
One of those southern guys, yeah.
Somewhere between Eminem and Kid Rock.
I saw him at a radio station festival, which is, an environment where you don't see a lot of anything can happen.
Right.
We got to schedule these things. I can tell you that as a manager guy, we got to schedule these things. He was up on stage and the crowd was like, not really there. You know, he's like third on a bill out of seven, you know,
right.
The crowd wasn't really feeling
not
him
his crowd,
so much.
Per se.
And he got kind of confrontational about it.
Uh-huh.
And the next thing I know, he's like, all right, people are not feeling this. I'm not going to play this set anymore. And he literally took the set list, wrapped it around his microphone and then lit it on fire.
Whoa.
And you could see the sound guy was so pissed. Like,
oh,
I had to run out of the mic and just gave it this look like, if you ever do that again. And I was like, whoa, we're up. Anything could happen here. He did an acapella version of Garth Brooks's Friends in Low Places and had the entire arena singing along.
Huh.
I was like, I really don't know what's going to happen next. Totally, like, the single for the radio station, he didn't play it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he just kind of was going wherever. And I was like, oh, man, I really missed this. And I do think that's rare. And, I don't know that you'll get that with the current version of Guns N' Roses. And if I could tie all the themes, because I think I've got this.
Okay.
And this is not something I planned out in advance. But
waiting
sort of,
with bated breath. Go on.
It's sort of come to me over the course of this conversation. But, you know, I think what we're looking for out of these reunion things, right? Like, these reunion shows are they're kind of like the zombie, right? You've got, oh, here's zombie Guns N' Roses coming around. And it'll be fun to see what happens when you introduce zombie Guns N' Roses into this environment. And in the same way that, like, a sandwich is a delivery system, really, for meat or vegetable or cheese fillings, right? The just having Guns N' Roses or what, you know, reunion band X or whatever at the show, it's a delivery system for the experience, right? Like, now when you go to Coachella, it's not about, you know, necessarily what bands you're seeing. It's about the experience of being there in the desert with pretty and fabulous people.
Uh-huh.
It's a delivery system for, you know, taking drugs or having sex or having a good time,
yeah,
or being at the party, right?
Or in the case of reunion bands, a delivery system for nostalgia,
totally.
Beautiful nostalgia.
So it doesn't matter if Guns N' Roses are any good or not. Having Guns N' Roses at the event makes it an event, and it's more of a party, and it's more of an opportunity for you to take a selfie and show people that you were there at this thing. Right? That's what we're looking for in modern society right now.
I think that's true. I think that's right. Now I'm going to do an incredible pivot and transition into what we don't have nearly enough time to talk about, but I want to make sure I sneak in. the sports angle of the day on the back end here.
We didn't talk any sports, did we?
No, and I'm good with that as a general rule. I don't feel the need to talk sports, but something you mentioned in an email, I wanted to tie in with something I've been thinking about the past couple of days because, and now right into our recapturing ancient glory discussion, because this sports year, I guess calendar year, really, we can confine it to the calendar year of 2015, has seen what I think is probably, although it's not, everything is not totally written on these, I think it's the ultimate demise of arguably three of the five or seven most cherished sports heroes of the last 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we're watching right now on the field slash court, Peyton Manning and Kobe Bryant are both completely done. Neither of them have anything left as far as I can tell. And then yesterday, I don't know if you caught this, but the press conference that Tiger Woods gave was shocking and seemed to indicate that he may never play golf again professionally.
I've heard about this press conference. I'll save my whole golf is not really a sport conversation for some other time. We can have that conversation.
Okay, but can we agree whether or not golf is a sport that Tiger Woods is one of the preeminent athletes of the past 30 years?
Figures. I'll give you figures.
Okay. Okay.
I'm not ready to call Tiger Woods an athlete. How's that?
Boom. That's insane is how that is, but you're right. We'll save that conversation. So
don't you need to play a sport to be an athlete?
How about figures in the athletic world?
Fair enough.
Okay. Three of the most prominent figures in the athletic world of the past 25 years, 30 years, are all finished. And frankly, none of them are having a storybook ending or even anything close to it. None of them are having a graceful ending at this point. You've got Kobe literally hurting his team more than anybody else in the entire NBA on a game-to-game basis, shooting the most he's ever shot in his career and the worst that he's ever shot in his career, both of which are incredible if you consider who we're talking about. Peyton Manning can't throw a football anymore and has been supplanted by Brock Osweiler ostensibly over injuries, but in reality, if you watch the games, the young kid gives him a better chance to win than Peyton Manning does right now or did at any point this year. It's so very weird. So I guess I'm really just trying to take your temperature on, and maybe we put Tiger aside, but for me, Tiger's in that same group of guys. These are three guys that were invulnerable, incredible, top-of-their-field stars for almost all of my sports-watching life. This is a generation I grew up with as a sports fan, and they all are just fading awkwardly into the background in kind of upsetting ways.
The Warriors right now are on, a historic, unprecedented in some ways winning streak, right?
Sure.
Shooting for the ultimate historic and unprecedented winning streak. You know what's a better winning streak, though, than the Warriors? Time is undefeated lifetime.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It is.
And so, yeah, I mean, look, not to take it back to the Warriors, but when I look out there, and I see Luke Walton, who was a guy that I remember in college.
Yeah.
You know, or you hear the Lamar Lamar Odom's in the hospital and we kind of think he's dead and people start giving these retrospectives. And I'm like, man, I remember Lamar Odom as a high school player.
Yeah, me too.
We're old, man.
Eventually,
this was going to happen and we were going to see it.
God, it's such a bummer.
You know what's interesting to me about Kobe?
I was just going to make the point quickly since you mentioned Luke Walton that Luke Walton is younger than Kobe Bryant, and Luke Walton is currently the interim head coach of an undefeated basketball team while Kobe Bryant is still playing for the Lakers.
I got to think there's probably another coach or two in the league who is also younger than Kobe. Brad Stevens is younger than Kobe.
Ooh, I don't think so, but it's close. Kobe's like 30, 37, 38.
Yeah, but I think Stevens is kind of running on there too. I could be wrong. I may look that up.
Stevens, born in 76, so he's 39. He's a little older. But yeah, same age group as Kobe Bryant, certainly.
What about Fisher? Fisher,
Kidd, I'm pretty sure, is older. But they're all in the same age area. Kidd, Fisher, you know, even Mike Budenholzer is not that old. So you're right. He's coach age now.
Yeah. And I'm in, look, I'm in Minnesota. You know, we're watching Zombie KG run around every night. So I,
but you know
he's
what?
He's basically a coach, by the way. That guy needs to just go right into coach.
That's the difference, though. And I think that's what's so upsetting about Kobe, and what I think would be upsetting if we have to watch Peyton Manning come back and be worse than Brock Osweiler and mess up the Broncos playoff run, is Kevin Garnett knows what he's doing. He went to Minnesota. He knows he's not going to win, but he has a great relationship with the franchise. He's going to transition into ownership and maybe coaching or GMing, and he's playing 15 minutes a game. He's mentoring the rookies. He's being a veteran leader. Kobe Bryant is playing 30 minutes, shooting the ball 25 times, and playing his team right out of basketball games. And you're talking about a guy who, look, the selfishness may not be brand new from Kobe, but the detriment to winning is. Kobe Bryant, it has been nothing if not someone psychotically dedicated to victory. And for him to be consistently, for more than a year now, hurting his team, I don't like watching it. And I'm not a Kobe fan or anything, but I remember what he was like and how good he was and how awesome he was to watch. And I don't like watching him now. It makes me sad.
I tell you, Kevin Durant wants to wash your mouth out with soap right now. He is not happy with you.
By the way, side note, quick sidebar. Kevin Durant, who was one of the most likable, inoffensive dudes in sports, just like 2 years ago, has become a red-ass, obnoxious, whiny ass, is the best way to say it.
I don't agree with him. You know, on that particular point,
he's done a few things like this, though.
But you know what? The whole Kevin Durant, and for those of you who don't know, Kevin Durant criticized the media for how much people have been talking about how lousy Kobe's been.
Actually, you know, what he said was, he said, quote, "You guys are treating one of our legends like shit, and I don't really like it."
Yeah.
That to me, as vaguely a member of the media, is a little bit offensive, because to insinuate that there's something inappropriate about the media, which is a fake entity anyway, because it's all just a bunch of random people that are not coordinating with each other. But to insinuate,
like the PC police.
Yeah, exactly. But to insinuate that it's somehow wrong to talk about the fact that Kobe Bryant sucks this year, that's their job. That's what they do. They have to talk about the fact that Kobe Bryant sucks this year. And I don't know about Kevin Durant, because I'm sure he's not even watching or listening to much, but I'm not seeing a bunch of people going, "Ah, see, Kobe was always terrible. See, this proves it. Finally, Kobe was never any good." No, I see people talking about a legend, a Hall of Famer, who stinks right now.
Yeah. He did say, like, "I understand you guys got to write your game stories." And you know, I mean, objectively, he does stink. I mean,
he stinks.
Really, he's literally the worst player getting minutes right now.
Yes.
Say,
he's the most. This is the way I've been putting
it. If you're just talking about, you know, player A, player B, player C, and looking at contributions and stats.
He's the most hurtful player in the league to his own team right now. That's the way I've been putting it.
Here's the way I feel about this. And this kind of covers, I think, almost all of this stuff. You know, I interview a lot of bands.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? And I feel like part of my job when talking to a band is trying to take this band that exists sort of on this artist planet that's very different from regular people planet, and like trying to bring them over to normal people planet for a while so that people on normal people planet can visit with them and sort of understand them and maybe artist planet a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like the athlete planet is kind of similar. Like, they just look at things from a different perspective than other people do. And I think this is just sort of an example of that. Another example, you know, you got that Warrior story there, right, where the guy was up like a blogger in Utah who was in
going after
room
Draymond.
It's just didn't appreciate, I guess, some things about the way Draymond was acting about the Jazz or whatever, and tweeted about it, and then all the Warriors went after him.
Well,
the Warriors were coming from athlete planet perspective of, hey, you're in the locker room and we should revoke your credentials because you're in there and you're not talking to anybody.
The difference is that's a guy who literally is not doing his job. He's in there gossip mongering when he should be talking to players, and he's reporting stuff that he's reporting snippets of an overheard conversation that he apparently misheard. So that to me is very different than coming down. And again, the thing that kind of rankles me is I know Kevin Durant is sitting face to face with a bunch of guys who can't afford to piss him off because it's their livelihood to get this guy to talk to him. And he's treating them like children and talking to them like imbeciles when really they're right.
But don't you think
that's what rankles me about it?
Don't you think these athletes get treated like children or product or inhumanely?
Sometimes,
all the time?
Sometimes, but they are compensated well for that.
And
it's
I think athletes are angry at the media as a body,
which is very silly.
Because parts of it don't treat them fairly all the time.
Yeah, but
an entire program dedicated to. Distorting.
Let's not even get into that. But fundamentally, we ask not only athletes, but people all over the world to handle themselves responsibly in work business situations.
I guess, but look, to me, if I'm a professional athlete and I flip on SportsCenter, which I think they all pretty much do at some point.
Yeah, they can tell you they don't, but they do.
And we're spending a week talking about Cam Newton dancing. Whether that actually affects me or not, right? I'm pissed off at the media for the way that they treat people, right? Or they treat my people.
Yeah, that's exactly the distinction to me. If Kevin Durant, and not that this is his purview, but if he was whining about, I don't know, if he said something like, I don't understand how the media can make a big production over this man dancing in the end zone because people start to call him thug. You know, if he wants to get upset about the media doing ridiculous things, I don't have nearly as big a problem with that.
But don't you think that, like, this is Kevin Durant turning on SportsCenter and seeing...
Yeah, it's him turning on First Take for 5 minutes,
seeing someone say
Kobe sucks.
Right, about Kobe's lousiness, and just seeing them on repeat and going, you guys are dwelling on this too much. I think that's, you know, maybe he didn't say that quite as artfully as I just did.
Instead, what he did was talk down...
That's his perspective.
Yeah, but instead what he did was talk down to people... A handful of people who had nothing to do with the thing he probably saw for 5 minutes. And in fact, that thing he saw for 5 minutes in all likelihood was not a reflection of the conversation going on at all. And that's what gets to me is you're going to come down on these people and suggest they're doing their job wrong. Well, you don't actually pay attention to the job they're doing. You have no idea what they've done. And you're reacting viscerally to something that has nothing to do with them.
Don't you think that if there were an entire category of people whose occupation was essentially pointing out to the general public what you did right and wrong about your job, that you might be eager to call them out for doing something wrong on occasion?
I have those people. They're called Twitter followers of the station that I work for, and I do respond to them on an individual basis generally if they rankle me enough. Absolutely. I can't help myself.
I make blanket comments about our fans all the time.
Oh, I can't help myself.
They make blanket comments about us without understanding anything that we do or why we do it.
They do. Or
even bothering to ask.
Well, and I like to go back at those people directly. My favorite thing is when someone tweets at the station as if I'm not going to see it, and then I can respond to them personally and be like, hey, pal, I'm right here. Feel free to voice your objections directly to me.
Right. This is not a much bigger rant, and it certainly bleeds into things that are non-toy department related.
Uh-oh.
Why is it that we no longer have any tolerance for any viewpoint that isn't our own? Like, is it okay?
Oh, boy.
You know what I mean? Like, why can... Yes, someone has an opinion that's different from yours about sports. Like, we got to get rid of them, you know? You know what I mean? Like,
one of my favorite...
This is a goofy... It's just a whole goofy discussion.
One of my favorite things to tweet at people, particularly people who have that sort of thing that you just described, is, you know, reasonable adults can disagree.
Uh-huh.
That's a thing. I expect we'll be doing that a lot right here on this very podcast.
The DJ made fun of the band that I like, and he doesn't like them. Yeah, so what? Yeah, he doesn't like your band. It's okay.
Is he on the recording
you
of your band?
Your band will live.
Yeah,
you know
exactly.
What I mean?
Is he playing over the top of the recording of the band you want to listen to? Because if not, I don't see that as a real issue.
Right. Yeah, he might talk over the first 10 seconds of the band you want to listen to, I guess.
And then,
maybe.
Probably not. He's probably not playing them if he hates them that much.
Right, exactly. It's probably true. So it's like, I mean, God, come on. And then the other thing, right, is that anyone, I see this all the time, you know, with people in sports who commentate about something. You criticize a team, and then inherently it must be because you are biased against that team that you have some sort of animus. You ever seen that thing that Keith Law has collected where he's got literally fans of all 32 MLB
saying
teams.
How he hates their team?
How he hates their team?
Yeah.
So apparently he hates all the teams.
Every national sports journalist has a collection of those, I'm quite sure. And yeah, you know, look at Joe Buck, same thing. Everyone who watches anything Joe Buck calls is convinced he hates their team.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
He doesn't. You know, he may or may not be the greatest guy in the world. I don't know Joe Buck, but I know he doesn't hate your team.
I think Joe Buck seems like a much better guy than he just is an announcer.
Well, that's a whole separate conversation.
Joe Buck the guy. I don't think Joe Buck hates any teams. I really don't.
No, clearly not.
Joe Buck is rooting for anything, it's for the best story and the most ratings.
Absolutely. It's very simple. That is what most broadcasters are rooting for, best ratings. End of story.
That's pretty much it. And I think Joe Buck's flaws as an announcer, have more to do with tone and sense of the moment than bias. You know what I mean?
Totally agree. Although that's also a conversation we can have another time, because I actually think Joe Buck is pretty good. But we've gone on, speaking of flaws, we've gone on way too long already.
We have. I don't even know how long we've been talking about it. It's been a while.
The counter is running over an hour, so that's certainly enough. I think it's time to say goodbye. And we have not discussed any sort of sign-off, but I did put together just a few goodbye sound bites.
You're not gonna play like best of highlights from the show?
I might play outtakes from the beginning right before we started. Right before I played the open, I believe there was something funny about me not having success with women. So maybe I'll put that at the end.
Yeah, that sounds good.
An outtake for the end.
Join us next time when we rip into Joe Buck. It'll be great.
When you rip into Joe Buck, I'm a Joe Buck fan.
All right. Join me next time when I rip into Kolsky for liking Joe Buck.
Fair enough.
All right, we'll see you then.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed, the light's out. Butter's getting hard, the eggs are cooling, and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor, have yourself a tremendous evening.
I put together a little open. It's not too long, or it might be. We'll find out. We have some voiceover from a lady.
Wow, you got like real voiceover from this?
No, I got a chick in the building to do something.
Oh, okay. Is that a first for you?
Getting a chick in the building to do something?
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, okay.
Yep. All right, there we go.